Welcome back, everyone. I'm going to give a short talk on the first three noble truths. And if you would like to put your video back on, sometimes better for me to look at not just myself, but that is definitely your choice if you're comfortable doing that. So I'm going to be talking about the first three noble truths from the Buddha's teachings. These are teachings that the Buddha gave. The first teachings the Buddha gave after his enlightenment 2,600 years ago. So last year, I did some traveling for the first time to Asia, and I spent, in 2019, in January, I spent most of January at a monastery in a remote part of Thailand in the Ajahn Chah lineage called the International Forest Monastery. And I'm kind of glad that I did my traveling in January and February of last year and not this year. So Ajahn Chah was a revered meditation master, in the Thai forest tradition. He died around 1991. And here's a quote from Ajahn Chah. "There are two kinds of suffering. There is the kind which leads to more suffering, and the kind which leads to the end of suffering." So it's an interesting kind of thought-provoking quote. Of course, we would probably choose to have the kind that leads to the end of suffering. And when I've reflected on this quote, these words, what I come to is that it really is our attitude towards suffering which changes that suffering from one type to the other. So the attitude accompanied by right view is the kind which leads to the end of suffering. So the first noble truth is the truth of dukkha, or sometimes translated this term dukkha, Pali term sometimes translated as suffering. So here's a quote from Einstein. "If I had an hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes thinking about the problem and 5 minutes thinking about the solutions." So from this, I take it that Einstein is suggesting that the solution is buried within the problem, or perhaps in our perspective, perhaps how we see the problem. Here's another quote from, this is from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese monk. "You know, I think the hardest thing for people, especially in the West, is to learn the art of suffering. We can't learn the art of happiness until we're okay with suffering, and that's the price that we don't want to get to, that we don't want to pay to learn the art of suffering." So some definitions of dukkha, as I've said already, one definition is suffering, but really dukkha, as I understand it, there's a huge range of experiences, from just very mild irritation to full-blown suffering. So here are some translations. Difficult, painful, hard to bear, unsatisfactory, or giving no real satisfaction. And Ajahn Jeff, another monk in the Thai forest tradition, has used the translation of stress. he told me that in a conversation he had with someone, they were, I guess someone had heard about Buddhism and suffering, and he was insisting that he didn't suffer. And then Ajahn Jeff just asked him, well, do you ever feel stress? And the fellow replied, all the time. I'm always stressed out. So that's prompted him to sometimes use this translation of stress. So another meaning of dukkha, I think from the Pali language, like etymologically, it means literally not very well constructed, kind of cobbled together, or not made very well. And the suggestion is that this could mean, in a kind of the imagery, the hole that is present in a wheel that the axle would go through. And in the word, it suggested that this hole is just a little bit off. So if you take the example of a bicycle, that if the wheel is a little bit off, every time it rotates, it just kind of jogs over to one side. And the solution to this in the bicycle is you take it to the shop and they adjust the tension in all the spokes, and then it runs correctly. And that actually, I find it interesting that the term they use when it is running correctly is that it is true, and they're truing the wheel. Ajahn Chah said, you don't have to feel embarrassed about the fact that you are suffering. We all suffer. So it's not kind of, there's nothing really wrong or wrong with us. There is a chant which is often done in monasteries called the Five Subjects for Frequent Recollection. And they relate to the five subjects are concerning aging. Technically, I am of the nature to age. I have not gone beyond aging. And the same with sickness and death. The next two relate to kind of all that I possess will become otherwise at some point. And then the last point is to do with karma. And maybe I'll talk about that later. But when this is chanted in Thai, the chant actually says, aging is normal, sickness is normal, death is normal. So it gives quite a different perspective on this, what we usually think of as a problem, as something that's not normal. So there's a task associated with this first noble truth. And that task I see as associated with right view is that suffering is to be understood. So then we can really examine this, like Einstein said, suffering is to be understood, to look at our own perceptions, examine what is the source of our suffering or our unsatisfaction. So that's a little bit about the first truth. So that could be quite depressing. But then the Buddha goes on to examine the source, the cause, and the cessation of suffering, and then the path. But before I get on to the second noble truth, I just wanted to talk about, I've written a little yellow sticky that was meaningful to me. And it's about a group of five qualities that are called the hindrances. Some of you may have heard of these. Excuse me. Hindrances are factories of misinformation, from Ajahn Sona. Hindrances are factories of misinformation. So what are the hindrances? Well, they're anger or ill will, greed, sleepiness or sloth and torpor, restlessness, and then doubt. Then I'm just thinking back to our story of the Nasruddin and what could be present to keep Nasruddin looking for the key where it's not located, where it's more comfortable under the light post. And maybe that's just more of a habitual way of dealing with things. But when these hindrances are present, these any of these qualities as being factories of the misinformation, I think they can tell us, oh, this is a good thing to do. Look over here. But the key is not located there. It's giving us misinformation. And if we cultivate kind of the opposite qualities, that can help us to look in the right place for something important, for example, for a long-lasting true happiness or peace. So if we kind of turn that over, greed becomes generosity, anger becomes goodwill, sleepiness becomes being awake, attentive, restlessness becomes peaceful, and doubt becomes kind of having a confidence. So that was just a little, I wanted to insert that, just bringing to mind some of the qualities that might keep us in one place or the other. So the second noble truth, the first noble truth described dukkha. This goes to the truth of the cause of dukkha. So I heard an interesting quote that might be relevant given our Zoom platform. The online world puts you in a perpetual state of wanting. And that was from someone who takes an online fast one day per week and was describing how they looked forward to it during the week. So hopefully on this day, that is not the case, that we are cultivating a healthy or skillful type of desire or wanting, and that is the desire for freedom. So the second noble truth, the Pali word that is the cause of suffering is tanha. Tanha is translated in different ways, sometimes craving or clinging or attachment. And I prefer the translation of thirst, even though it's not a literal thirst, but something that's kind of underlying is present in our experience. So the cause of suffering is described as tanha, or craving, clinging, attachment, or thirst. And there's, in this teaching, there's three different types of clinging that are described. So clinging to sense pleasure. So this is a kind of a tough one for us to consider, because we think about pleasure that we get through our senses. So what this made me think of was a children's story, a children's tale of Hansel and Gretel. And Hansel and Gretel are going through the woods, as I recall, is just kind of from memory. And they're young children, and they come across this beautiful house that's made of, I presume it's like a gingerbread house, ornately decorated with candy and icing, and it's irresistible. And I believe there's a witch involved. Some potentially bad things were going to happen to the children because they had this irresistible kind of desire and were kind of encouraged to, oh, try this out, have a bite. And I'm not sure, maybe the children are saved maybe by a woodsman. You might know the answer or how it plays out. But anyway, I think you're probably familiar with this story of a cautionary tale. But the idea is that we are not going to find a lasting, enduring happiness in this through the senses, the conventional senses, because these are all arising and passing away, and then we naturally get attached to a pleasant sensation and it disappears. So then that becomes disappointing or irritating or suffering. So one cause is clinging to sense pleasure. And the Buddha does give us other alternatives of a superior pleasure that can be had. The two other clingings are clinging to becoming and clinging to non-becoming. So clinging to becoming, there's a self solidifying around our likes and dislikes, our thoughts or our sense of who we are. Also creates difficulties for us. Not so much, it's actually the clinging which is the problem. And then clinging to non-becoming is more of a checking out as a strategy for dealing with stress. So this also is not a great long-term strategy. So being distracted or sleeping rather than being awake. Go on a little bit with clinging. That seems to me is a big factor in present day society, is clinging to views and opinions. And just how much conflict there is in society, this is a major contributor to this conflict. Here's a quote that I saw. It was from Francis Collins, who's in the United States, Dr. Fauci's boss, the director of the National Institute of Health. In an unusual kind of frank statement, he was talking about lamenting that common sense mitigation measures had become politicized and claimed that aliens from far-off worlds viewing Americans' behavior amid the pandemic would conclude that the Earth was all but doomed. So my interpretation of that is that that comes from clinging to views and opinions. So the Buddha said one other thing in this particular teaching, that he said the five clinging aggregates are dukkha, are suffering. So the five aggregates are kind of how we experience ourselves. And these are combinations of our mind and our body, different aspects of our mind and body. And These are always in flux, but we take them to be solid. So in order to see through these, what are called five aggregates, or our mind and body and different aspects of ourself, the suggestion is to see or get a sense of who you are as an activity rather than something solid, a verb rather than a noun. And your sense of who you are is something you create through your actions. So to start to get a sense, which we might in the meditation, of this flux that we experience, these different sensations, emotions, feelings that are coming through, like in the meditation where we compared them to waves coming and going. So the task associated with the second truth is that craving is to be abandoned. And the third truth is around the cessation of craving and attachment, and the cessation of dukkha, or the cessation of suffering. So often this is talked about in terms of letting go. I'm just going to read a quote from Ajahn Sumedho, senior monk in the Ajahn Chah lineage, about letting go, which he practiced early on in his time of being a monk. The practice of letting go is very effective for minds obsessed by compulsive thinking. You simplify your meditation practice down to just two words, letting go. Rather than try to develop this practice and then develop that practice, achieve this, go into that, understand this, read the suttas, study the Abhidhamma, learn Pali and Sanskrit, and on and on and on. Write books and become a world-renowned authority on Buddhism. Instead of becoming the world's expert on Buddhism and being invited to great international Buddhist conferences, just let go, let go, let go. I did nothing but this for about 2 years. Every time I tried to understand or figure things out, I'd say, let go, until the desire would fade out. So I'm making it very simple for you to save you from getting caught in the incredible amounts of suffering. There's nothing more sorrowful than having to attend international Buddhist conferences. Some of you might have the desire to become the Buddha of the age, Maitreya. So let go of becoming Maitreya. Just be an earthworm who knows only two words. Let go, let go, let go. So that's one take on the third truth, the truth of the cessation of craving and attachment, of the cessation of dukkha. So, of course, we find this when we are experiencing some kind of dukkha. We find this difficult. And we will, you know, as part of our practice, we experience kind of knowing we should let go and having something sticky around that. Here is Ajahn Amaro's take on why this is so difficult to let go. The one who is watching is working for a different company than the one who wants to let go, and the two haven't been brought together. Eventually, a sigh and a realization. I'm tired of this, and a real letting go from a more basic level than I should be a good Buddhist and let go. This is from a Dharma friend who shared an experience that he had. Greetings, everyone. I had a wonderful moment today I would like to share with you all. I came home from work a bit earlier than expected today due to supply issues at the work site. It was a gorgeous day, the sun shining, not a single cloud in the sky. I got out of the car, a very gentle breeze touching my face. No sounds to disturb. The trees and grass seemed to be shining. I just stood there soaking it in. An amazing sense of peace, beauty, and well-being came over me. Then a thought gently filtered in. Is this sense of peace in the sunshine? Is it in the trees? Or is it in the silence? The answer came back, no, it's not in any of those things. It's in my own heart and mind. And of course, if I'm feeling not so peaceful, that also just comes from the heart and mind. What a blessing to know where our problem and salvation lie. Not out there, anywhere, in any situation, but in our very own fathom-long body. So that's, I find that kind of a nice reflection. And something we can do, take away from that, is to notice any peaceful moments that we do experience. Oftentimes we do experience peaceful moments, but we don't pay attention to them. We kind of miss them, go on to the next thing. So I'll just finish with this. Is that sometimes people kind of stop at the third noble truth and say, okay, well, I guess I understand Buddhism now. But I find there's a paradox in Buddhist teachings. And so the Buddhist teachings talk a lot about letting go, but that also talk a lot about the cultivation of skillful qualities. So when I was in Thailand at this monastery, it was a pretty rigorous schedule. And just reflecting on this practice of letting go, didn't feel like you were letting go because you got up very early in the morning and practiced, and then you were given a task to sweep leaves. So as a lay person who was staying at the monastery, that was one of the jobs I was given. So twice a day, you'd be sweeping leaves. And we might complain about maybe raking leaves here a couple of times a year, but early in the morning and in the afternoon, sweeping all the paths and the driveway free of leaves. So it quite didn't feel like you could just lie in bed and let go. There was a lot of activity. So this afternoon, I'll talk about the fourth noble truth, that is the Noble Eightfold Path, and the task associated with that noble truth is that it is to be cultivated. So I'll finish there, and we're going to go on to our mindful lunch time. And I'll turn it over to Sandra if you have any announcements at this time.